Good morning, 738 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. In studio, we have Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons. Chip, welcome back to the show. Good to have you, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm great. You brought with us some guests to observe.
Yeah, we have
Whitney.
Caroline Lucas is with us. Her plan is to become not just the sheriff.
Well, let her say it. Does she want to say it? Whitney, would she want to say it on the radio?
I tell you what, introduce yourself, Caroline.
I don't think she can reach that mic. There you go. All right. Carolyn is Whitney Lucas's daughter, 10 years old, and a redhead, so you know she's a good people. What is your goal in life, Caroline?
I'm going to be the first female sheriff in Escambia County.
First female sheriff in Escambia County. If nobody else gets there first. You can't control. But yeah, okay, all right. So that would put you in, you'd be eligible in about 15 years. So, all right, 2040. 2040. 2040 campaign announced right here. On News Radio 92.3. You get with Robert Benner and see if we can get you qualified real soon. We'll get signatures, okay? All right. Hey, welcome. Good to have you here. Back to Sheriff Simmons, the current sheriff of Escambia County.
Yeah, they're after my job.
I know, right? You know, but at least you got warning.
Yeah, I do have warning. Yeah, forewarned is what they call it.
There you go. All right. but we had a couple of things happen overnight, including, one report of a stabbing on Mobile Highway related to a Planet Fitness.
Yeah, the report's out there, but it's so I did some checking on it, and what has been reported is a stabbing or a person was attacked at a Planet Fitness on Mobile Highway. When checking with the shift commander, we discovered that that's not exactly what happened. That did not happen at Planet Fitness. He happened to call from the front of Planet Fitness, and also what he was reporting is that is a bunch of balderdash, really, okay. What he's saying, because he says he was at a drug house trying to buy drugs and was attacked by a person with a machete, but it appears to the deputies to be just an individual that may have fallen and cut his face on some rocks. That's what the scene looked like, that's what the injuries looked like, and that's what they could surmise based upon what he's saying.
And his solution was run to Planet Fitness, call you guys, and claim a machete attack.
Yeah, I think it's a lot cooler than it is. I fell and
hit some rocks in my face.
On a rock, okay. Because I'm inebriated.
All right, I see the other part there. We also had something happen out on Perdido Key. Somebody was waving a gun.
Yeah, that one just came in. It's one of our overnight unusuals. And what happened was an individual was claimed. Well, actually, we got a report that an individual was waving a gun. Shouting incoherently from one of the condos over there in Perdido Key. When we get there, we find the person. We find the person did have a gun, and we took him for what we call an evaluation.
Okay, like a pre-Baker Act. Okay, got it. Okay. We also had, Michael Johnson arrested for a fatal shooting on Wilson Avenue in Kincaid. And the only way I can describe this person is when I first saw him, I thought he was wearing a Viking helmet. It turns out those are tattoos.
Yeah, some call them tattoos.
Facial decoration,
yeah.
You know.
What it is there.
Wanting to never feel out at a, out of place at a pyre ceremony for a fallen fellow Viking.
Picture.
Yeah,
it's an interesting photo of him. I'll tell you that
what
is it called, Candy? A snoopa?
It's an atastupa.
A stupa.
Where they
jump
off a cliff. And it's from Midsummer.
Okay.
Sorry, Sheriff. Excuse me. We don't have many
of
those here.
What language is that?
She's the, it's Norse.
Swedish? I don't know.
Of course.
All right. Go ahead.
I'm so sorry.
Well, yeah, we arrested him, charged him with possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. This is one of those ones where we evaluate the reasonableness of an action whenever you end up shooting and killing someone, then you claim self-defense. In this particular situation, the reason we have not arrested him for homicide yet is because there were some threats by this guy to harm him. We actually got called to that residence about the ultimate shooting victim.
Okay.
And we made him leave, and then he came back. So the shooter, I'll call him the shooter, he did shoot and we do believe he shot and killed a man, and he claims it to be self-defense. We're looking into that. There are some, it was at his property, at the shooter's property.
So presumption would sort of lean
in that
direction.
Which is one of the big things that we look at.
Right.
Secondly, we did confirm that we were there prior to that and made the guy leave. The guy did come back. There were threats to do violence to him. That's a good start, right, with regards to reasonableness.
Self-defense, right.
Yeah, but we're not quite finished yet. We're still completing that. But in the meantime, we did charge him with possession by a convicted felon. Now, if you're defending yourself, even though you're a convicted felon, you can arm yourself to defend yourself. The problem he would have in this case is that he actually bought the weapon, the firearm, from the victim weeks prior. So he bought the weapon as a convicted felon weeks before this from the ultimate.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then he had it in his possession for the last month or so.
Now, that's interesting. I just paused for a second because I did not realize that if you are in danger, you're allowed to arm yourself even though you're not normally allowed to possess or carry as a felon. Is that what you said?
Yes. Well, we were not charged convicted felon, but you arm yourself only to protect yourself for someone else. So you can't arm yourself. Okay.
It's kind of hard to imagine a circumstance where that would be lawful. It's, you know, like you're at grandpa's and, you know, grandpa's got guns and somebody comes and threatens your life and you go and grab one of his shotguns temporarily. I mean, like that kind of a scenario, it's kind of a rare thing, I'm sure. But still, it's worth knowing because it makes sense, I guess, you know.
Yeah, nothing simple in law enforcement.
Yeah, well, and fair enough. That's why we need to have people like young Caroline to come and, you know, run the system and make it all straight for us. Sheriff Chip Simmons, we had a case that's, I think it's not your case anymore, but in 2024, you had a guy named Darian Finley who opened fire on some of your deputies after a car chase. And that's been, now he's been indicted, I think, which is quite some time later, but this is not your case anymore, right?
Well, I mean, I would say it's always our case. When you shoot at our deputies and then we shoot you, that's going to be one of our cases. It was originally in state court, or our first circuit here.
Okay.
And then the federal prosecutors decide they would like to adopt it as a federal case. And they have that discussion with the state attorney's office, and they agree that, okay, we'll drop it because there may be more a harsher sentence or an easier prosecution on one level versus the other. In this particular case, he's been indicted on a federal charge, and it's decided that was the best route to take.
Okay. All right. We also had I thought this was a very just an interesting story because it told me something I did not know already, which was you had it on your Facebook page. I know North of Scambia also had it, that Deputy Katie Touchstone was, and she's a canine officer with Buster, who, by the way, is a beagle. It's kind of an unusual one. I mean, not unheard of. There's, you know, I know the road cam for Escambia County uses beagles for scent. They're good at scent tracking, right? The beagles are. And making a lot of noise when you
That's
don't want them to make noise.
Yes.
So, as opposed to, you know, the Malinois or the shepherds. But anyway, she found a missing person, but also using a scent kit. So what happened? And tell me about the scent kit thing, because that was the first time I'd ever heard of that.
Well, we got a report that there was an endangered individual that had been missing for between 2 and 4 hours. So using the scent kit, Touchstone, Deputy Touchstone and our canine Buster, who you just described, were able to track the missing person over about a half of a mile trail and then determined that the person's direction was traveling. Obviously, we were able to guide our patrol units into an area, and we were safely able to locate the missing person unharmed. We participate in a Bringing the Lost Home program with a scent kit, and basically it is one of those things where you can preserve the smell of the unique smell of a person, allowing canine to get a whiff of the person before searching for those that are missing.
How broad is the applicability of this scent kit thing? Because, you know, like when I was a kid, they took us to school and got us fingerprinted, not for a record database, but so our parents had the information. So if anything ever happened to us, we got abducted or something like that. And I know we still do those kinds of things for parents, but is this meant to be like everybody should go get a scent kit on their kids, or is this for vulnerable adults who, you know, might be silver alerts or might have, you know, some kind of a disability that are more likely or prone to go missing? Like, how widespread are these scent kits, and who should have that done?
Well, my understanding is those that should have it done are those that are more likely to go missing, to wander. In this particular case, I don't know if they've had a situation where they've wandered off before, but that's the type of person that we would get a scent kit for.
It's a kit designed to capture, you know, objects that would have their scent so that you can give it to the dog so they can track
it in case you don't have it. Someone goes missing. If Andrew McKay goes missing tomorrow, we may not have something with your scent on it, but we have this kit that we had preserved, so we can use that that scent. That's how amazing these dogs are with regards to their sense of smell.
Also, just for, you know, clarity's sake, I do go missing a lot.
Well, I think your smell's pretty strong, so we'd probably be able to find
it. It's very easy to find a source.
with those shirts you wear.
Wow. Wow. Ouch. Oh, I feel so seen and also hurt.
And smell.
That's exactly right. I feel smelled. We had a really tragic outcome to an incident that took place a long time ago. You had a deputy, Jeremy Cassidy, who was shot in 2010, but just passed away. But it was still related to that incident, right?
Yeah, back in October of 2010, three of our deputies, well, more than three, but three initial deputies responded to a domestic violence kidnapping. There were shots exchanged in a hail of gunfire, basically, and Deputy Cassidy was critically injured. In fact, for weeks, really, he clung to life. There was a lot of blood drives. I wasn't at the sheriff's office at the time.
You were at the police department, right? Yeah.
Right. And he had to medically retire. Organ transplants and a lot of other things.
So very, very serious injuries. Very
lucky to be alive.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, 15 years ago, he passed. Now, there is some, some connection to, obviously, the shooting to his ultimate passing. So, as you can tell, I'm wearing a mourning band now.
Yeah.
We will wear them at our agency until the funeral, which, as I understand, is going to be Thursday evening.
Okay.
It's just a terribly sad. I've been friends with the Cassidy family. Jeremy's father, Henry, and I worked together at the Pensacola Police Department. He was a sergeant, retired sergeant, and he passed away, I believe, last year. And so the Cassidy family's kind of taken a hit the last couple of years.
And this is, it's not a one-to-one direct connection, but certainly related, having to do with, the incident that took place back then. But this is the first time in a long time that we've had a sheriff's deputy death so directly connected to in the line of duty. Am I right about that? It's been a while.
That's correct. In fact, we just reorganized our... reimagined, if you will, our law enforcement memorial out front. And so there's, the names of the deputies that are fallen. And it has been some time, fortunately, since we have lost a deputy. And this is unique because it happened 15 years later, but I don't know that you can deny the connection between the critical injuries that took place and ultimately what, those injuries changed his life, him and his family's life. And though he fought a good, hard battle for 15 years, I think the connection is there that the shots that struck his body were those that contributed to his death.
Yeah, and I mean, I think people might know that it was cancer, but it's still cancer related potentially to medicine and treatment resulting from the injuries and the transplants. And there's a nexus there. And
if it weren't for the shooting,
he wouldn't have had all the other stuff.
He would not have had that medication.
Wow. I had a question. It just whenever we have heat like this, it makes me think of this. We think of the heat related to the homeless. We think of heat related to us, like out on the beach doing things. But your officers operating out in the heat, wearing their gear, which is extra unpleasant, and getting in and out of the Tahoes or the Explorers, I forget now, whatever. Canine, same thing. The Tahoes. What does the heat do to your officers? And also, does it affect the crime rate? We hear stories about, when there's heat, people are upset more often and they involve in domestic kind of things more often. Is any of that true?
Yeah, I think it is true. I think that's why, there's two reasons I think that crime rates go up a little bit in the summertime. One is that there are people out of school and college and that sort of thing.
A lot more free time and more people of the age.
There's parties out there. But I do think that the heat plays a factor. I think that there's a misery index, if you will, where people get out and then they feel like the only way that they can refresh themselves is to drink liquor or beer or make themselves feel a little bit better. And then that contributes to dehydration. So we have not just the medical, but we also have the disturbance, the anger, the tempers flare. And then we end up getting, as we talk about people can't walk away.
Yeah.
They should walk away, but they don't seem to be able to. And so, we have that issue in the summertime. Now, regarding our deputies, we went to an outer carrier, if you will. So whenever they're in the car or whenever they're doing a report, they can actually unattach the outer carrier.
Instead of being under the clothes, right?
From that. But I know that when I first started, there was no such relief. The body armor itself was a lot thicker. The shirts were thicker. They weren't near as breathable as they are now. So we've come a long way. Even the air conditioners didn't work as well in the cars
as they
do now. But we are very aware of the heat, and obviously our deputies are as well. So we make sure that they understand that you can get overheated quickly. And look, we're chasing people. We're running after people, jumping fences. We're out directing traffic in this heat. So it's something, certainly something that we consider.
I got a text in here from our good friend Josh Newby at the Council on Aging West Florida that they have sent kits if you have somebody who, you know, feels like they're vulnerable to that. And then somebody else just texted in and says, Sheriff, there was a bloody altercation on the boardwalk this last Sunday, two drunk adults versus some teenagers. Grown adult struck a girl in the face, and then some physical fight started. Deputies showed up. I don't know if you know anything about it, because I know the sheriff doesn't know all the incidents and stories, but do you know anything about this? Were you able to find the adults?
I understand that there was a disturbance on the boardwalk area last weekend, but by the time we got there, it was one of those things where and they weren't forthcoming with the information. So all we got was the suspect in this fight was a cousin of the individual, so it was an extended family type situation. If it's the same one. And by the time we got there, half the family had left and no one wanted to cooperate and there was no serious injury. So I believe that's what they're talking about, because we did read about it on social media. But that's what happens sometimes. When we get there, people would rather us not be involved, especially with family disturbance type situations.
Sure.
And there's no report of someone going being hospitalized because of it.
Okay. And when I say, yeah, sure, I don't mean that's okay. I just mean I understand that's normal. Unfortunately, that's a problem that you guys deal with.
There were two. That was a disturbance. Another situation was a guy trying to, I think, jump it off a balcony, and he ended up getting injured, and I think Life Flight actually came to transport them. So those were two separate incidences.
Got it. Very good. Well, Sheriff Chip Simmons and future Sheriff Lucas, thank you for the time this morning. I appreciate it. As always, we'll talk to you again next week, sir.
You bet. Y'all take care.